here at the door. You're about to enter a world of heavy lifting, power lifting, strongman, and everything in between. Think you're ready for this? Let's see, tough guy. It's time for the RX Power Hour with your hosts, Nathan Payton and Ryan Bracewell. This is the RX Power Hour.
Welcome to the RX Power Hour on RXMuscle.com with your hosts, Nathan Payton and Ryan Bracewell. Tonight, we're very pleased to bring to you Mr. Scott Hoss Cartwright, who Ryan actually has standing by on the line. Ryan, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good, man. You know, we're not going to do our normal intro. We're just going to kick it right off like we've been doing for the past few weeks and get started with a guy that goes by Big Hoss. He is an elite power lifter. You know, for the guys that are in strongman that don't know who he is, he's also written for Power Magazine, and he's been in Power Unlimited, the movie. How you doing tonight, Scott?
I'm great. Glad to be here.
Well, you know, tonight we kind of wanted to... One thing that intrigued me is, you know, you're all about being good at time management. You have a full-time job that takes up a lot of your time. You have, you know, a wife and three kids, and I'm on your Facebook, and I always see that you're at their events, you're at games, you're at, you know, this and that, but you're also a full-time power lifter, and a lot of guys like to make excuses why they can't achieve their goals, and you would be the exact person they should be talking to on how to, you know, set those goals and meet them, even if you are too busy to do a lot of other things.
Yeah, it's a more than a full time job, and I lack sleep, and sometimes the diet's a problem. Trying to fit things in, if you know what I mean. I tend to be running here or there and hitting different sides of town every day, and I travel a lot for work as well. So I don't know if anybody listening to this thing is over 300 pounds, but if you hop on a plane for work, it's not a fun thing to do. So I'm all about time management and priorities, and usually it's about putting family first and powerlifting second, and hopefully nobody from work's listening, but work's usually third. I think too often people get caught up in this idea of being successful at work, when at the end of the day, for me, it's my success at work means that I can provide for my family and powerlift, and so that's how I put things in perspective.
Yeah, and I know I've seen where you talk about getting up and even lifting at 5 a.m. in the morning on days where you're busy. Does that affect your training in your mind, or are you able to lift, be just as strong at that 5 a.m. time as you would if you went in the afternoon?
You know, it's tough sometimes when you don't have a spotter around. If you've got to lift at, you know, 5 in the morning, I'm just as motivated at 5 in the afternoon as I am at 5 in the morning, but sometimes if I'm squatting, it's a little bit hard to do alone sometimes. At least it's hard to do alone and survive. sometimes you'll see, I'll post videos of myself doing squats of 800 plus alone. And quite frankly, I don't really care. I've got to get the work in. So whether there's a spotter or not, it's got to get done. And I don't care if it's 5 in the morning, 5 at night. If I'm not doing it, someone else is. So.
Now, you're constantly going to hear people make excuses about they're too busy. What kind of things do you do to make sure you have time for this? I mean, do you, you know, are you one of those people that carries around a little day planner everywhere you go? Or do you just, can you remember everything in your entire schedule in your head?
No, I have a wife that keeps me sorted out in that regard. I don't have a day timer. I mean, I use a BlackBerry, obviously, for work, but she lets me know where I'm going, what I'm doing, and how I'm doing it, and it's usually fly by the seat of your pants on a daily basis. And the good news is I have training partners that are flexible enough to understand when I call and say, hey, I can't be there at this time, but I can be at a different time or a different day. They understand that it's not, you know, sometimes you get these guys that train and can't make it because, you know, they're going to go see a movie with a girlfriend or something. They know that my excuses for going at a different time are valid and real, and they're always work or family related. And so having patience on their side is important. And they know that it's sometimes a little bit last minute, but they know I'll bend over backwards to help them whenever I can. So that it means a lot to me that they're flexible, and, you know, my wife letting me know what goes on every day helps too. I wish I had a better system, but it gets a little chaotic. but I don't miss training sessions. I make them up if I have to do them at a different time or a different hour, you know.
Now, how do you train with your gear? Because I know you are a geared lifter, and I mean, you do kind of everything, but do you train in your gear when you're working out by yourself, or do you just go raw those days?
I will, if I'm benching, I'll go raw. Bench sometimes gets a little hectic if I don't have people around. But other things like the deadlift and the squat, I can squat without a bunch of people around and gear. That's not a problem. You know, most of the stuff that I do is single ply anyway, so I don't need a whole lot of help. When I do double ply meets, I usually don't get in my gear all that often, so I can make it work. You know, at the end of the day, you get in the sport to be strong. So whether you're doing it in a suit or without a suit, you just got to put some effort in the gym, and it doesn't really matter.
Now, when you first got into powerlifting, did your wife know what all this was going to entail, scheduling-wise?
No, not really. And I kind of got in it by accident. So when I met her, I played rugby, and she knew I had to have something to do. Otherwise, you know, I'd probably kill a neighbor or something. And I found powerlifting kind of by accident. And oddly enough, I decided I wanted to powerlift. I'd never done a deadlift before, and this was, I think, 8 years ago. And it's kind of a funny story because I'm in my basement, and I'm trying to learn to deadlift. And what I did was I ordered the Ed Cohn deadlift video. And I watched this thing, and I'm watching him pull 900 pounds, and I think, you know, I'm a strong guy. I should be able to do 700 or 800, no problem. I knew nothing about deadlifting. Go to the basement. I know I'm a little bit naive, I guess. I said, I go in the basement, I try 315, and I struggle with it. And literally, I missed 365 two times in a row. My wife comes down to, you know, she's wondering why I'm cussing and screaming and throwing stuff. And she says, you know, maybe this powerlifting thing just isn't for you. So, you know, I guess I did kind of go into it by accident. At that point, it was more of a challenge. So, yeah, I don't know about time management-wise whether she knew I would take it this serious, but she knows I'm a bit excessive.
Now, speaking of the rugby, were you at super heavyweight weight back when you played rugby? Were you a big guy when you were playing?
I was about 250, somewhere between 245 and 255. You know, I'm not a tall guy. I'm 5'9", so, you know, that's still pretty big guy for 5'9". But I was always able to run, and I could run all day. And that's, you know, in rugby, that's what the key is. You got to be tough when there's 20 minutes left in the game, and big guys generally can't do that. So now I'm about 3 1/4. So I think she wishes I was back in like 250 days, but maybe someday.
Yeah, because in rugby, once you come out, don't you have to stay out? Isn't that the rule?
Yeah, you're in there, and you're in there for 80 minutes, and you're running, and it's a great sport.
How did you actually get involved in that? That's not a sport that a lot of Americans, you know, perform.
Now, oddly enough, I was in a weight room and a guy came up to me and said, "Hey, you should try to play rugby." And I had just gotten done playing football in college, so I took it on as a challenge and took to it pretty quickly. And it's a great game, and it's a challenging game, and it's a game where you got to be fairly tough. And most of the guys that I played with always wanted to know what the difference was between rugby and football. You know, the difference is that football is a more violent collision. Rugby is a more rugged sport. But yeah, you know, I was in the weight room, and it was actually a funny story. I asked this guy if he'd spot me, and I think I had 315 or 365 on the incline. And he says, I'm not going to spot you. You can't do that. So I just went ahead and did it on my own, did a few reps, and then he came over and was a lot nicer and told me I should try to play rugby.
And you've also ran a marathon before, is that correct?
Yeah, that was after rugby, before powerlifting. That was kind of how I got into this by accident. Was that I ran a marathon and I came in, I weighed 258, and I had gained weight training for it. We're talking 5 runs over 20 miles. And wow. We did this thing called the pump and run, where you had to bench 250 pounds when you went to pick up your little packet for the race. And so I didn't know how many you had to do. I was sitting there doing reps with it, and the guy's like, stop. But what I hated about it was I got passed at about mile 20 by a lady with a sign on her back that said, I'm 67. So I decided that, you know, running really wasn't for me at that point. And the funny part about it was I was trying to catch her because I was so angry, but I couldn't. So, mile 20, you're kind of delirious.
Yeah, my wife ran a marathon, I think it was 2 years ago, I think it was, you know, and I was about 300 pounds when I'm like meeting her at little checkpoints and stuff like that. And I kind of jogged with her, you know, for about, I don't know, 100 yards at one of the checkpoints. My buddies were taking pictures of me and I looked back and I'm like, yeah, there's no way I could ever do a full marathon. I would die after about 3 miles, I think.
I had tore part of my quad at about mile 7. And so it was a struggle, and I did fine. It's just when I came across the finish line, they had the like medics grab me. They're trying to tell me to go to the medical tent, and I got a little belligerent. They left me alone, so I was okay. I just looked bad. Funny story was when I first started training for it, I had told my wife that first long run, and I think I ran about 6 miles. And I came home and I walk in and she's screaming, are you okay? Are you okay? And I don't understand what she's talking about. And I had worn a cotton shirt and I had rubbed my nipples raw from sweating so bad that both nipples were bleeding and gushing blood. And the whole front of my shirt was bloody. And I thought, man, no wonder all those people were staring at me. So, you learn when you're fat, you have different ways to, you got to learn to run and wear different shirts, I guess.
Well, you definitely have a very interesting story. I would venture to guess there's no guys out there that went from being in a marathon, like being a marathon runner, to becoming an elite powerlifter. I mean, it's especially not a super heavyweight elite powerlifter. It's just, that's not really two things that go together very often.
Yeah, I don't think there's any guys out there that have squatted 1160 and ran 26.2 miles. So, I don't know. It's a normal combination.
Now, Scott, actually, I had a question about something because, you know, I do strongman. I've been lifting for 15 years. And while I was kind of reading up on you, one thing that I saw several times is where it states that you have the second highest conventional powerlifting squat in history. Now, I'm not 100% sure what they mean by conventional. Are we just talking raw with a normal shoulder width stance? Is that conventional?
So for lack of, I guess, a better term, it's single ply squat. So, and actually okay. It's the third now. There's a guy named Henry Thomason who did 1,058. He's a beast. I've been to a lot of meets and I'm a bit cocky and I never think anybody can out squat me. And I've squatted in meets with Donnie Thompson and Chuck Vogelpohl, and I always think that, right? It's a mindset you have to have. When I saw this guy squat, I thought, wow, here's a guy that could out squat me. And not that I don't want to get the record back, but don't get me wrong. But yeah, it's a single ply walked out squat. There's a lot of federations that will allow a monolift based squat and single ply gear, and if people want to do that, that's fine. I don't think it's the right way to do it. I prefer to kind of do it the old-fashioned way, walk it out, walk it back in, be a man about it.
Now, speaking of kind of the old-fashioned, you know, you like kind of the old-fashioned way of doing things. I know you lift in the multi-ply, you know, meets, but is that something you like doing, or do you just kind of do it as something, you know, a change of pace?
I think, you know, I do single ply, I do multi ply. I'm looking to do a raw meet. I just haven't had an opportunity yet. I think I said earlier, I got into this sport to be strong. And if you lift multi ply, you should lift single ply. And if you lift multi ply, you should also lift raw. I think you should be able to do all three. And if you're not able to take the ego hit by taking the gear off, then you shouldn't be in the sport. It's simple as that. I don't, you know, my best raw bench, I did 545 for 2, right? I've never done a raw meet, but I know what I can do in a multi-ply shirt. I know what I can do in a single-ply shirt, and I know what the difference is. And I'm willing and able to admit it. You know, a lot of guys, I think, are afraid to take the gear off and take that ego hit. But I'll do any meet anywhere, anytime, against anyone. I like lifting in big meets. I don't like doing backyard meets. I don't like doing small meets. I want to lift in the biggest meets there are because I think they hold the most water and bring most validity to your lifts. I think too often some of the bigger lifters will try to go to these local meets and have their buddies judge them, and that's just not the right way to do it. When you go to a big meet, you go lift at the Fit Expo, the Olympia, or one of the pro-ams, it's a different aura. It's a different environment. That's where you want to be. Screw the numbers. Go there and lift and see what you can do when there's a real crowd and a real judge there. That's fun.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. That's kind of why I signed up. I just did a meet 2 weeks ago. It was a push-pull meet in Dallas, and it was my first pro powerlifting meet that I've ever done, or I call it pro because there was money. I knew once I saw the competitors, I wasn't going to win. You know, I'm going against Benedict Magnuson for one. James Searcy was supposed to be there, and a couple other really big guys. Yeah, there's some awesome guys, and I know I'm not going to beat them, but I still had my goals. You know, I had the PRs that I wanted to set that day, and I went up there to do that, and that's what I did. And I was, you know, I think I got fourth or fifth on the deadlift overall, and I was completely happy with that because I hit what I wanted to hit.
I tell you, I said this before. I said a lot of guys that I've trained with in the past and people I train with now, if I go to a meet and I win, but I don't get a PR, that's not a successful day. You know, if there's money on the line, I totally understand it. But if you're vying for a trophy or a plaque or some medal, who cares? I would like a personal record, period. If I don't do that, I don't get something done, that means I made no progress. Great, I beat somebody. But I didn't beat him with my best, and that's what you want to do. You know, it's a strange sport in that regard. If there's money online, I understand. But again, I want to go into something, and I want to push myself, and I want the most pressure possible. And I think most successful lifters think the same way.
And with your training for the contest as they're coming up, I believe that you've used Westside specifically for your multiply lifting heading into those. Why do you feel that Westside basically, I guess, is best suited for that multiply type of lifting?
I think when you're lifting in multiply gear, you're going to be under a different sort of pressure, right? I mean, 1,160 pounds on my back was a whole lot different than 1,025. You know, it's a 10% difference, but it's night and day. So that pressure means that you've also got to be able to strain with the weight in a different fashion. The bar speed is going to be a little bit slower. How you set up and how you sit back into it is going to be a lot different. The same in the bench and the deadlift. Whereas in single ply gear, you're going to have to descend with the bar a lot faster, and the straining is different. You're probably not going to strain the same amount. I mean, you see some guys that will bench in multiply shirt, and that press on the way up will take 6, 7, 8 seconds. Whereas with a single ply shirt, you can't do that because you can't distribute the force into that shirt the same way. It's got to be a lot faster. And the same is true with the squat. So I think what happens with Westside is Westside teaches you to handle a strain. It also teaches you to think about speed, right? Because you've got a max effort day and you've got a dynamic day. If you're able to combine those two, I think it fits perfectly with multiply. You know, I've had success with it in single ply as well. Although recently now for a single ply meet, and I'm doing a little bit more of a progressive overload because I had some issues with stability. And so I want to get more of a static load on my back than what I've done in the past. But, you know, Westside, again, it's all about handling stress and strain. And you're able to do it twice a week. Whereas in something like a progressive overload, you're not going to strain in the same way when you're doing 7 or 8 reps.
Right.
Now, what do you like to use when you're lifting raw?
Well, I've got some lifters in my gym that are now, they've been using kind of a Wendler 5-3-1 program, or it's kind of a variation of it. And it seems to be working really well for them. They're younger lifters, and so I think just about anything they do will help, but for the younger crowd, and then some of the females that are training raw, again, the 5-3-1's working for them. But you know, my thoughts on training is actually I was listening to your interview with John Anderson, and I really appreciated what he said. I think he said something to the effect of how, you know, he does reps and it'll help him for straining. He'll do something else for reps. And the reality is effort in the gym will result in results and success. And unless you're completely overtraining, it's all about effort. And there's no magic pill to it. There's no secret training method that's going to make you tenfold better than somebody else. A buddy of mine was in a car once with Paul Childress, and he was asking him these questions about, you know, how do you train? And he says, you know what you need to do? Paul said this to him. He says, you need to take the top five guys in each weight class and throw out the window what they do. Because they're going to get strong, and they're going to be successful at just about anything, any method they're using. You need to take the guys that are about from 10 to 20 in that weight class to find out what they're doing. Because those are probably the guys that didn't come into the sport with natural ability and they had to earn it. And I believe the same way. It's about effort. And it's about finding things that work for you. When it stops working, change it. I did progressive overload for 3-4 years. Changed to Westside. And now I'm kind of back into this more of a progressive overload for now. And it's working. My deadlift's going up. I really like the Cone Filippi deadlift program, by the way. I think it's for guys like me with small hands. It's great for your grip because you do a lot of triples.
Well, and that's something I was actually going to note later is that, you know, for a guy who's shorter, you know, that has smaller hands, and especially for a big guy at your height, you have a very good deadlift. I mean, it's rare. Usually the super heavyweights, especially the shorter ones, they tend to not have as good of a deadlift.
And I got to bend over to get change out of my pockets. My arms are so short, you know. I'm the only guy who pulls sumo and the bars above my nuts when I finish. I mean, I got a long way to pull for a short guy because I got short arms. And given my hands are so fat, I also have been having a grip problem, right? So there's a lot of things that, well, like I said earlier, you know, my first time I deadlifted, I missed 365. And the first meet I did, I pulled 501. I mean, I couldn't deadlift to save my life. But I worked on it. And if you listen to somebody like Louie talk about deadlifting, he'll tell you that there's no 10 or 12 week deadlift program. There's an 18-month, 2-year program. And that's about building up your back. It's about building up your glutes and building up your hamstrings. You know, you find a great powerlifter, you look at him from the front, you're never going to know. Look at him from the back. That's where you find a great powerlifter, because they're going to have a strong back, they're going to have big lats, they're going to have glutes and hamstrings, and those take time to develop. And grip takes forever when you don't have it naturally.
Well, Scott, you know, we talked to Benedict Magnuson about grip specifically last week, and we can tell you his secret. It's to stop working grip.
Really? Is that what he said?
That's almost like word for word. He said he tried a whole bunch of stuff and his grip never got better. And then he said he stopped working his grip and basically was using straps and his grip all of a sudden got better.
You know, I've heard that from some of the older powerlifters from the 70s and 80s. They would say they would pull as much as they could with their regular grip. Then they would switch to straps and pull as heavy as they could because they thought their back would get so much stronger that their speed off the floor would increase with the heavier weight. Therefore, the load is in their hands a less time. And they believe it.
Makes sense.
And it works for some of these guys. Yeah. I mean, I haven't tried it. Right now, the triples are working for me. I hope that they work in the next, it works in the next meet. But I've decided that I hate Benedict because that guy's just too strong. I hate him. Too jealous.
Oh man, it was amazing. You know, I was able to be at that meet, and it was just amazing to see, you know, the lift in person as it went up. It just looked so effortless. It really was truly amazing.
When you see some of those guys that do weight TV, Sean Frankel, you know, when you see the guy lift, it's just your eyes pop out. You say, how did that happen? Right? I mean, the lift just goes, and you think he shouldn't have been able to do that. I used to train with a guy, Mike Hara, who is an IPF bench-only guy, and with 160 pounds, I'd see him take 170 dumbbells and do them for 10 reps. And when you put them in his hands, you'd think, this poor little guy's going to die. And you start pumping them out, and you look at him thinking, wow, that's just wrong. We always say, look like Tarzan, lift like Jane, right? The guys you think can really get it done are never the guys.
And speaking of a bench only guy, I kind of laughed when I saw Power Unlimited and you started talking about the bench only guys or the deadlift only guys. I thought it was kind of a, it gave me a little chuckle as far as them not being true power lifters or whatever you want to say, however you want to call it.
Yeah, I think Mark had something to say in there about, you know, he still respects those guys. And, you know, I do have respect for some of those guys. Like, I love Rob Luando, great guy, right? But, I mean, the thing about Rob and some of those other guys is that I respect, they know what it's like when you squat. Because they do squats in the gym. Rob does that stuff now. And he's doing it to get his bench up. It's the guys that don't squat and don't deadlift and don't care to. But I don't understand. Like, what's the point? I've done a bench-only meet. I felt like I did nothing. Granted, I didn't do a lot of weight, but when you're done with it, you didn't do anything. Do a full meet and see what your day's like. And why not just squat so you don't win? I've never understood that. Like, take 400s and just squat, and then go do your bench. I don't understand it. I don't know. What's the other thing we see now? People doing the CrossFit division in powerlifting? What's that?
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, lit, man. What?
Like, you're going to enter a division called CrossFit. What? Just lift.
You know, is it basically like a subcategory? Is it a subcategory for... Okay.
You know, it's like going... pardon me. It's like going police and fire. Makes no sense.
That's funny. I actually haven't seen that in Texas yet. I'm sure it's out there, but I haven't seen it yet.
What's the qualifications to enter into the CrossFit?
You know, I don't know. I've just seen it in a couple of meets, and you know, you combine that with, could you be CrossFit and bench only too? How would that work?
Oh man!
You know what I mean? Again, you get into the sport to lift and be strong. Just lift and be strong. Compete against yourself. I just think differently.
Well, and I kind of liked what you were saying in the movie. You know, you were basically talking about how you had worked with some at the Special Olympics, and you have this girl who's like going up to the platform like in a walker or wheelchair or something like that, and gets up there and squats. And it's kind of like you said, you know,
true story. That girl couldn't weigh more than 70 pounds, and I think she squatted 90 or 100, and I was in shock. And she could not walk. Well, she squatted.
Unbelievable.
You know, like...
Do you train powerlifters for the Special Olympics, or were you just helping out at this particular meet?
Oh, yeah, that was years ago. It was someone asked me to come and just help out, and they asked if I would do a squat while I was there. And so I squatted 600 or 700 pounds just to kind of show them, and it was fun. It was inspiring. You see these kids up there, and they're all about they enjoyed the sport, and you know, they smiles and, you know, sparkles in their eyes lifting weights, and the kids are quite strong. Funny story: I was there, and there was a kid there, and about a year later, he was a big kid. He's probably 6'4". I come into the gym. I was training at Gold's Gym at the time, and I turn around in the locker room, and all of a sudden this guy tries to hug me, and it was that kid. And he said, "Oh, hi, Scott," and it hit me right at that moment who the guy was. And I'm standing there in my underwear in the locker room, and I'm thinking, okay, gotta be nice. He's a Special Olympics kid, you know. And it's a little bit awkward, but, you know, it doesn't happen every day.
Now, going from the training that you do, is there any specific accessory type of work that you tend to use? I mean, outside that you feel benefits? I mean, with your background, as far as from the running, you know, the rugby, basically, obviously, a very athletic background. Is there anything that you feel directly translates into powerlifting that maybe a lot of people just really don't think about?
You know, not so much. I'm not a big sled puller. I'm not a big prowler pusher, right? I mean, come on, man. I'm 325 pounds. I'm tired walking to the refrigerator. what I like now is sometimes I'll train and it won't be, I'll have a bad day. And I'll turn around and I'll go and I'll do 10 sets of squats. And I may only have 225 on there. I may have 315. I may have 405. But I find even on bench day, if things are shitty, I'll decide that I'm going to kill myself today because I deserve it. And that, I used to do the same thing when I played rugby. If I felt like I had a shitty practice, I'd run myself to death because I felt like I needed to do some more work. So, like we talked about this earlier, it's effort and work, get work in. And I always, sometimes in the gym, I'll tell guys, they'll say, what do I do now? And I won't know what they've done, and I'll tell them, 5 sets of 8 in the squat. Pick something you can do for 8. And this is at the end of the session. They're tough.
Right. Well, and along with pushing yourself hard, you train through a lot of injuries, don't you?
Yeah, I'm kind of like most guys at 41 years old. I've got my fair share. I've torn my tricep and had it attached with 2 screws. I tore my right bicep. I never got it reattached, so got kind of a half a right bicep. Torn my left quad, and then I tore my right quad in the squat competition against Brian Siders at the Olympia. That one was pretty bad. And I tore my PCL on my right knee. Gosh, I just keep going here. You name it, it's been torn. But I don't believe in you know, if, for example, when I tore my tricep, I had surgery 4 days later. I was in the gym doing chain suspended good mornings with a camber bar. So I figured out, hey, here's something I can do. I believe that if you're injured, you've got to find a way to train. I don't care if it's doing abs or finger push-ups or whatever. You got to get back in there. And these guys that, you know, say they hurt their back, so they're going to take 6 weeks off. Well, that's going to set you back 6 months, not 6 weeks. You can't let an injury hold you back. There's always a weakness you can train. And I won't stop. I think I said in that movie a long time ago, someone asked me, you know, when are you going to stop this? I said, well, some catastrophic injury will keep me from the platform at some point.
Well, it's good to have goals. I mean, we all need those.
Yeah, well, come on. Just put it out there.
Now I got to ask you, on the not having had your actual right bicep fixed or repaired, how does that affect your deadlift? Does it feel different to you, I suppose? Or how would you describe what that feels like?
When it tore, we had a strongman guy, a pro strongman guy, I won't say who it is, but he came into the gym one day and we were doing fat bar rack pulls. And I decided there was no way some guy's going to walk into this gym and beat me at anything. Well, he won. my bicep snapped. But I had a meet in 6 weeks, so I just switched my grip. And I went with it and kept it that way. And then I actually reversed it back. But some of my deadlifts, my right arm, because that's the one that tore, will lag a little bit if I'm not thinking about it. But in a deadlift, I can't curl my bicep, so therefore it can't snap. It has to stay straight. Right. I don't have a choice. And if I lose my grip, it is on the right side where it's torn. I don't lose the left side ever.
So, interesting. Now Scott, you mentioned, you know, earlier that, you know, you're 41. And, you know, we've talked to a couple powerlifters, whether it be on the show or just, in, you know, online and things like that. And the guys that are, you know, kind of in their late 30s or early 40s, there seems to be a trend with several of them starting to cut weight. And, you know, they're still powerlifting at an elite level, but they're doing it in the next weight class down. You know, Scott Mendelson, I'm going to mess up his name, Vincent D'Enzo, I think is how you say his name. I'm probably mispronouncing it. Yeah, you know, and they're starting to cut weight and lift in the lower weight classes. Is that something you know, having your plans for the future, whether it be this year or 5 years from now or anything like that?
You ask my wife, she'd say, do it now, you know, but or every time I go to the doctor and I get those record blood pressure tests, right? I always wonder, one of these days. But I hadn't, I've got an elite total of 242, 275, 308, and it shows, so I don't think I'm going to drop to 220 and do anything, but I haven't really thought about that. I have specific goals in powerlifting, and when I achieve them, I'll probably stop and then do it more recreational. But until then, I'm going to go on until I break. And, I'll weigh what I weigh.
So what are those goals? Let's get them out there, and then now you have to set them once you tell us, and they're out in the open.
I'd like to total 2,600 in single ply gear and squat 11 in a conventional sense, right? Locked out. And then obviously the 2,800 in multiply, and I'd like to break the all-time multiply squat record, which I believe Donnie Thompson just reset at 1,260. So those are my goals, and if those things go well, I'd also like to, get into a raw meet and do 2,200. I'm sure I could come pretty close to it now, just the way I sit, but just haven't had the opportunity.
Has anyone ever walked out 1,100?
Yeah, the Henry Thomason kid guy walked it out and squatted it at the Fit Expo and got called for depth. It was quite impressive. I've walked it out before, but I never squatted it. So.
Yeah, man, I'm not a power lifter by any means, but, not in the level you guys are, and being a strong man, we do the yoke, where we're picking up 900 pounds, 1,000 pounds and walking with it. But I have to say, I know a lot of guys give multiply powerlifters crap because they don't necessarily, some say they don't go to depth or because they're using gear, things like that. But it's like a lot of these people talking shit are 400-pound squatters. They've never had 1,000 pounds on their back. And I've never tried to squat 1,000 pounds, but I can tell you it does not feel good even picking that shit up while it's on your shoulders.
No, and when you're talking about walking it out, you're walking it backwards. Right? Like when you're squatting, you're going backwards. And therefore, making that step and making it solid and getting into the proper squat position before you start, I don't know, with me, it just never happens. I'll work on it night and day, and I'll have desks counted out and ready to go. And come meet time, I'll walk that thing out, and I'll have one toe 45 degrees one way, one toe 90 the other, and I'll look and I'll think to myself, oh, screw it, I'm squatting. I can't tell you how many times I've looked down at my feet and thought, oh, shit. And the judge has got his hand up, and I think, I just look at him, okay, I'm going. I ain't going to mess with it, because I start messing with my feet, I'm going to fall over. And it's hard. And but that's, to me, that's part of the challenge, and people will say it's unsafe. I've seen one guy walk a weight out and get hurt, and it was 705 pounds, But I tell you what, I've seen 20 or 30 take weight in a monolift they can't control. And get hurt.
Yes. Collapse.
So,
yes.
The whole walkout thing also adds a level of condition to where if you can't get that thing out and control it, you're going to get hurt. You can't squat it. So, people want to use single ply, use a monolith. That's fine for them. That's fine. I don't care. I'm not comparing myself to them. I just want to do it the way I want to do it.
Well, and it's how you train as well. I mean, if you train to walk it out, you're going to be a lot better at walking it out than some guy who's always using a monolift. It's just that simple.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just different. I'm a guy who, not many guys do both, right? But not many guys lift multiply and single ply and have done, bigger totals. I know the difference between the two. And they are two completely separate movements. And the reason is if you're a monolift, you can get your feet a hell of a lot wider, and you can get in a more proper squatting position to start. You can get your chest up.
Right.
You can get in a great position. Right? And in multiply gear, it's a different movement. You got to sit back a heck of a lot more to grab that gear. Single ply walked out, you're not always going to be in the right position. You can't get very wide. And also, you don't have the gear to sit into that you do multiply. They are different movements. And the squat should look completely different. I'm one of those guys, I always say, do as I say, not as I do, because mine are always ugly, but they go up.
Well, of course, everyone's going to want to know what kind of gear you use. That's going to be a big question. So you want to let us all know, you know, for when you're going multi or single, what you're using?
Yeah, I've historically used the Titan Centurion to squat single ply. It's I've used other suits, and it's the one that I prefer. And it's I get them right off the rack. I don't ask anything custom. That's just the way I use it. I'm sponsored by Titan, so obviously I use Titan shirt and Titan deadlift suit. I have not used the Boss to squat in yet for multiply squatting. I've used the Ace from Metal, and it's just I just haven't got to it yet. I have one, just haven't started to use it.
You know, there's a lot of debate between the whole squat suit and deadlift suit. You know, some guys say deadlift suit's the same thing as a squat suit, just turn it around backwards. Or, I mean, you've heard all that stuff. What do you feel is the main merit between the separate suit for each?
So it depends on how your body type, right? I know for me, I can't have a very tight suit in the chest when I deadlift. I need to have some movement, so I can get down to the bar a little bit easier. You saw Magnus when he pulled raw. He's got a bit of a gut, so he's got to be able to, he rolls that bar into his shins, right? I do a similar thing sumo, because I can't get down and have my chest up. And so if my suit's too tight up top, I'm going to be rounded at the bottom, which means I'm going to be rounded at the top. And then a guy like me, I have to pull properly, or it isn't going anywhere, because I don't have the levers to pull right. Like other people. So the deadlift suit, again, for a big guy with a belly, tends to be a little looser in the straps and probably tight right in the hips. I think you'll see that with some of the, you know, really big guys. Whereas with a small guy, they can have really tight straps because they got a small stomach, and that's a part where they can kind of bend forward and get to the bar easier, and right before they can pull their chest up. A guy with a gut cannot do that. So the difference in the type of deadlift suit, I think, is all body type related, and the same is true with a squat suit. I don't really like my straps very tight in a squat suit ever. Single ply or multiply.
Interesting.
Whereas other guys, if you're big and you get them too tight, it's too hard to breathe. Right. It's whereas smaller guys can tend to get them a little bit tighter. You know, if you've got a lot of body fat too, it fits in them different, whereas it's different in a bench shirt, right? A bench shirt, some of the fatter guys fit in them better because that stuff can kind of mush around.
That's a great point.
you look at some of the bench-only guys that go single ply, and you'll see that they kind of, what's the politically correct word? They're not all that ripped, you know? So, some of them.
Well, and speaking of that,
I'm sporting a thong at the beach either, but.
Well, no, and by the way, I love your new, I don't know if it's new, but your current Facebook profile picture, just the back of your head. it reminds me of the bulk, if you've ever seen them. Yeah, it reminds me of the Bulky Boy logo. I don't know if you've ever seen that clothing line, but they do a lot of stuff with strongman, and I would assume powerlifting as well.
Yeah, no, I know that stuff. Yeah, thanks.
Well, and speaking of that,
or my kids up there.
Yeah, well, and speaking of like the shape of some of the powerlifters you're talking about and fitting the fat into the suit. You know, Nathan, I don't know if you know this, but he is a nutritionist. He does the diets for a lot of strongman, and so we always like to ask the guys kind of what their diet looks like. You know, what do you eat on a normal daily basis to maintain your size?
I think we touched on this a little earlier. I'm a cardiologist's new car, I think, someday, right? Cardiologist sees me and they smile. They see a sports car, but it's probably because of my diet. But I struggle to get in enough protein on a daily basis. It's a daily fight with my wife. We don't fight about money. We don't fight about kids. We don't fight about anything. We fight about where the hell's the food? There's no dead animals in my fridge. There's no dead animals in my house. I need to eat. And I try to eat as much meat and eggs and milk as I possibly can, and I never get enough, and I'm always complaining. I have a problem trying to eat in the mornings, and it's tough when you're going to squat, because I have to shove food down, and, you know, I'm thinking about squatting, and it's always a chore. I know this past Sunday, I didn't eat enough, and we had everybody come over and squat. And about 2 hours into it, I was ready to get started, and I started to get the shakes because I just hadn't had enough food. And it's a mental thing. But again, I don't have a great diet, but I can tell you that it's on my mind 24 hours a day whether or not I got enough protein in the day. And when I'm like that, next thing you know, I'm grabbing 32 ounces of milk and I'm chugging it. Because one thing I do is I do get at least a gallon of milk in a day.
It's very common on a dairy farm, so it's just cheap,
easy protein, and it's always available.
Absolutely. With your, you know, as you've kind of gone up in the weight compared to, you know, again, rugby days, it's kind of silly to compare back to when any of us were in college. But do you recall kind of any one period where you decided, as far as when you were going up through the powerlifting ranks and kind of going up through the weight classes, do you remember any one particular thing that you were doing, adding in more of, per se, to go from, you know, the 240 to, you know, on up? Or, I mean, kind of what was the strategy?
So I qualified for the Mountaineer Cup back in, geez, I don't remember. It was the last Mountaineer Cup they put on, and my goal was to qualify for that thing. I mean, you know, it's for me, I'm looking at, they got Ed Cohn and Brian Siders lifting in this meet. I mean, it was Gene Bell was lifting in that meet, and I qualified for it, and I think I came into the meet, the qualifying meet, the USPF Nationals, at about 270. And I thought, oh my God, I got to gain some weight. I got to, you know, if I'm going to compete with these guys, I need to not embarrass myself. And that's when the milk started, and that's where the meat started, and that's when I just honestly started thinking, okay, every day it's all about protein, every day it's all about food, and it's all about, you know, focusing on, so I don't embarrass myself in this meet. I mean, I had a 2,000-pound total, and I had just done USAPL Nationals, I think, 3 months before. So, I just needed to get to a level where, again, I didn't want to embarrass myself, and I ended up embarrassing myself. I went there, and I blew my squat suit out in the warm-up room, and I bombed in the bench. So I ended up opening raw with 749 because I had no other squat suit, and I got it. Oh, but next thing I ended up bombing in the bench, but... Yeah, that was the day I qualified. That night, I thought, I need to get it to a different level, and I learned.
Very interesting. Now you also have your website.
Embarrass myself a little bit. Say that again.
You also have your website. You know, I know that you train and do things like that off of. Do you want to go ahead and let our listeners know how to contact you and kind of what your website is?
Yeah, my website is hossstrength.com, and it's all one word, hossstrength.com, and it's I keep my training there. Rob Luando's training is on there. Probably about 20 people that keep their training logs there. Keep some videos up of the people from my gym that train and their meets and so on. We put them up there, and then I have a YouTube site that I post up there too. So I don't sell anything. We don't sell T-shirts. Don't sell videos. We just lift weights and try to get stronger. And you know, I have a real day job, so I don't have a whole lot of time for that other stuff.
Yeah. Well, and on top of Titan, do you have any other sponsors that you'd like to throw out there and thank?
You know, I have no other sponsors at the moment. Every year, Universal Nutrition's kind enough to send me out to the Arnold the last 2 years and lift in the cage, and I'm always grateful to them. I was a great time this past year. Had a good time. I think I squatted 800 pounds, 200 pounds of chains for 5 reps in the cage. That was a lot of fun. So, again, thank you to Universal. But Titan's my only sponsor at the moment, and they've been more than gracious to me.
That's a hell of a lift right there.
No kidding.
Yeah, I was getting going, and Tiny Meeker had benched the day before, and he was on the microphone, so he was kind of teasing me a little bit. He goes, you know, can you get this for 2, Scott? Can you get this for 2? So I did it for 5 just for him.
There you go. Well, Scott, we really appreciate you coming on. I know you're a busy guy, and, you know, you have a family at home waiting on you, so... You know, we'll let you get rolling tonight, but we really do appreciate you coming on and taking the time out of your busy day.
Thanks, guys. It was really nice talking to you. And as you guys probably heard, I went and closed the door because my kids just got home. Never ending over here. Never ending. I appreciate you guys having me on. I had a good time.
Well, thank you again,
thank
Scott.
You
have a great night.
Good.
Very good. Well, thanks to, again, listening to the RX Power Hour on RXMuscle.com. We're going to go ahead and head to a break. And when we come back, rumor on Ryan doing squats in a thong.
Healthy chocolate is revolutionizing the way people think about chocolate. Using a patented chocolate-based delivery system combined with a proprietary herbal formula to give you 10 times the auric value of other well-known antioxidants.
Auric? What's an auric?
That's oxygen radical absorbance capacity.
Is that ejectable oral?
Just know that it's good.
I get.
Healthy chocolate from UltraFit360.com is comprised of 70% premium cocoa, is sugar-free, and...
Sugar-free? Would this stuff make me crap my pants during ass-to-grass squats? Because if so...
Excuse me, no, if I may.
Good.
Healthy chocolate uses no artificial sweeteners. The ingredients in healthy chocolate have been clinically shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels and...
Wow. Okay, when combined with GH, Slin, IGF-1, and various other peptides to conquer...
While we didn't intend to cause a revolution in the way the world thinks of chocolate, we nonetheless at UltraFit360.com welcome the dialogue that healthy chocolate has opened. Healthy chocolate. Fitness has never tasted so good. Visit UltraFit360.com today. Hydrolyze Ultra, the leader in cellular hydration water. Hydrolyze Ultra water has been designed by shrinking and reshaping molecules to allow a faster and more sustained delivery into your cells. Our cellular water has gone through a magnetism and laser treatment process, along with adding electrolytes to our special ingredients. This allows all nutrients to be absorbed at a maximum cellular state. By using Hydrolyze Ultra, all nutrients, supplements, and carbohydrates you consume will be absorbed at a greater rate. Lactic acid gets flushed faster, and you'll feel fully hydrated. Get the advantage that top athletes have achieved. Try Hydrolyze Ultra today. Visit HydrolyzeUltra.com. That's HydrolyzeUltra.com. P28 High Protein Bread is the official bread of RX Muscle. Are you looking to incorporate more protein into your meals or just want to enjoy bread again? Then look no further. Try the 100% natural P28 High Protein Bread. P28 High Protein Bread is a formulated revolutionary breakthrough product. Packed with whey protein isolate, 14 grams of protein per slice, 12 grams of carbs, 8 essential amino acids, and made with 100% whole wheat. Fear bread no more. Build a better body with P28. Order today at highproteinbread.com. P28 is also now available at bodybuilding.com and many other retailers. Order now. Highproteinbread.com. P28 bread. RX Muscle approved. Shaker Pro has designed the most innovative shaker in the fitness and bodybuilding world. Shaker Pro is the only shaker where the powder and liquid are stored separately and mixed together at the exact moment you desire. Mixing occurs in the closed Shaker Pro system. That means no more mess, just a perfect shake, guaranteed. Preparation takes place anytime, anywhere, in the car, at work, or in the locker room. No need to transport separate ingredients with you. The Shaker Pro is an all-in-one solution for everyone with an active lifestyle. The patented Shaker Pro chamber system guarantees that the mixing and blending of the ingredients will always produce a perfect shake every time. Simply twist, shake, and enjoy. Find out more about the Shaker Pro at 4sportlife.com. That's the number 4sportlife.com. This is the RX Power Hour.
And we're back from the break, and I'm a little irritated already because Nathan's sitting here telling y'all about things that were only meant for his personal viewing pleasure, but I guess I'll let him talk about it since he's already brought it up.
What, viewing pleasure. Now, what is that? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder? Is that that's the saying? So, well, no, you know that, you know, I'm always looking for some way to help try to take either an athlete that I work with or you know, the sport in general, you know, kind of trying to get exposure, things along those lines. And of course, you being a natural fit, you know, it dawned on me while I was watching TV on Sunday that as I was watching Victoria's Secret commercial, that, you know what? That company has not even begun to tap the mecca that is the strongman genre. You know, they haven't tapped into it at all. How many dollars have you personally given the fine folks at Victoria's Secret for clothing that you personally could wear?
Well, that's none of the listeners' business. No, but I'll tell you what, with the heat and the humidity kicking in Houston, I feel like I've been wearing a thong that's like two sizes too small. I swear I just need to go take a bath and baby powder because I just feel like one giant raw lump from all the sweating and everything. It's ridiculous. And it's not even summer yet.
Yeah, that's definitely the Texas thing. And that's why you've got to make your annual, or actually, I guess it would be biweekly trip down to Tractor Supply here in Texas and get you a big old case of that monkey butt powder.
Okay. I never tried that one.
Yep.
Maybe see, I need that, though.
Yeah, a little monkey butt. Get rid of that baboon ass. Otherwise, it's just going to be a miserable summer.
Oh, that's just wrong. That's just wrong. No, but yeah, I haven't been squatting in a thong, but I did do squats today. I was pretty happy. I don't think I've mentioned it on air yet. I'm kind of changing up my training style a little bit, kind of like Scott was talking about in the interview. You know, you kind of do something till it's not really working for you. And, you know, I've been doing like a strongman modified West Side style. And, you know, it's worked great in the past and it was still working great. I think my most recent PR was like a 700 for a double on box squats. But what I started to find out was my weaknesses were essentially getting worse compared to the things that were getting better. And that's why I decided to change it up a little bit. And we're doing something with a little more reps, but still going heavy and going all out, you know, to failure type effort. And did 405 front squat for 8, which isn't super. I think if I had gone heavier, I still would have been able to get 6 or 8. But with front squat in me, it's like the cardio aspect, because I'm used to doing 3 reps with front squat because it's not one I like doing for more reps. But I'm still pretty damn happy with it because, you know, it was all the way below parallel and just a belt and knee sleeves. So, you know, pretty good, but no thong.
Well, you know, that's going to be the secret to keeping you aerodynamic for your speed up off the box. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, that'll definitely make me want to get up faster. That's for sure.
Anything else going on in your world this week?
Nah, not really. You know, 1 week closer to having the baby, but I did want to mention again, you know, for the people who might not have caught our episode last week, and if you didn't, shame on you. But April 23rd, RX Muscle does have the Bros vs. Pros Challenge, and it will be a 2-part event this time with the bench press for reps. It'll be, you know, all weight classes, no CrossFit class. It'll be 315 pounds for as many reps as you can do. The winner will take home, I believe, $2,000 cash. And as far as I know, everyone is invited, whether you're a pro powerlifter or a CrossFitter, it doesn't matter. And in addition to that, this time they will also have a strongman event, and it's going to be a 600-pound tire flip for 60 feet, best time wins. And I will be up there with my pregnant wife, and she's going to cheer me on as I try to bring home $500 cash to put in my son's bank account.
Excellent.
So that's about the only thing I have. I don't really have anything special to talk about. What about yourself?
Not a whole lot. I was going to ask you, though, you know, last week we had Benny on after he set the world record, and I thought that he acknowledged he had a meet in like Finland or somewhere coming up in about a week, but I think he's actually still in Texas, and I can't blame him. That's why we're still here, because once you're in Texas, you just don't leave. But I think he's still here. I think he's with Dobson up in Arlington, because I believe he's either just did a seminar for Brian at Metroflex there over the weekend. And, you know, so maybe he flew home today or whatever, but he definitely ended up with a much more extended stay, I think, in Texas than possibly what was originally planned. And, you know, again, it's due to the fine state of Texas. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I got some updates online that he was doing some sort of seminar, like a deadlift seminar on Sunday, which had to be pretty interesting, you know, because after talking to him about his deadlift training, you know, that's usually what the seminars are about, is how to train to do this or that. And I can just imagine the people that are at the seminar going, so I just deadlift once a week and maybe twice if I feel like it.
if you forget that you already did it once.
Yeah. No, but I definitely loved his attitude towards everything last week. I thought it was awesome. You know, it's just,
I agree.
I do what I want to do. That's kind of how it works, and just do it, do it with some intensity.
Right.
Yeah, but pretty good stuff. And it, you know, and I have to say, I really liked Scott's interview tonight as well. It's just his whole attitude towards powerlifting is the way it should be. It's the way all the powerlifters should be towards powerlifting. It's You're not there just to win. I mean, yes, winning, it's about winning, but you're there to beat yourself. That's the idea.
Right.
You can win and beat yourself all in one, but if you go and say you miss a PR, maybe you can still win, but that still sucks. You know, I mean, yeah, you won. That's great. I'm happy. But if I had gone to Dallas and didn't hit 800, but I got second place, I wouldn't be happy. You know, yeah, you got second place, but then
you'd have been ticked.
You know, but then I didn't hit the PR I wanted, you know, and that's what it's about. Right. It's about setting goals for yourself and meeting those goals, because this isn't a sport where you're going to get rich. So you have to have a good reason to do it, and it shouldn't just be trophies, because then I can go buy a trophy if I want a trophy.
Right. Yeah, a $10 piece of plastic doesn't really hold a whole lot of muster.
No, not at all. So, well, I guess that's good for this week. And you said you ain't got nothing else?
Nope, I'm good. Again, on the with the upcoming contest there, Bros versus Pros, you know, Chris Mason, who was a guest of ours, and you can listen to the past episode that he was on, you know, his company At Large Nutrition, definitely the major sponsor for helping to make that happen. So we definitely appreciate his involvement. And I'm still rooting for him coming out. I want to see him wrestle the tire, you know, chase you down or something along those lines. So,
hey,
Chris, if you're listening, Chris, there's a tire where you'd be flipped.
Hey, there's no rule. This isn't like one of those games on that you see on a commercial where nobody who works for Coca-Cola can be in the Coca-Cola game.
Exactly. No,
all comers. If Chris wants to come out and try to win, if he can win, take the money back home with him. That's all I can say.
There you go.
All people are welcome for both contests. So. But we'll let y'all go for this week, and we'll be back next week. This is Ryan Bracewell and Nathan Payton with RX Power Hour on RXMuscle.com.
You've been listening to the RX Power Hour exclusively on RXMuscle.com. For more great shows, visit RXMuscle.com.